Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about Groot. Gruit? Yes.
Yes, because peek behind the curtains, listeners. This is a re-record.
Yeah, just the intro. Because, okay, the word is spelled G-R-U-I-T. So it looks like it should rhyme with fruit. And I've heard humans call it Groot. And a lot of the time, the articles written about it in These Are Modern Times reference, like, I am Groot. But yes. I think that the more technical scholarly pronunciation for it is Gruit.
Yes, and you discovered this after the recording was done, wrapped up, you know, nice little bow, wipe your hands of it, and here we are. I blame Marvel, actually. I want to say I squarely pin the blame for this on Marvel, because how are we supposed to resist all the Groot jokes? I think that's ridiculous to ask of us.
I agree. And I love Groot. I love that we live in a timeline where James Gunn made a movie about Rocket and Groot, and it's very popular. Like, that is wild to me. I'm like looking at like Tromeo and Juliet and going like, that guy? You hired that guy? I love him, but what, Marvel? And then Rocket Raccoon and... Okay, but anyway, so I agree. It's Marvel's fault. Totally willing to place the blame on them.
Excellent. I'm glad we're on the same page here. So just know that we did... This is one of those episodes where the pronunciation is going to shift based on who and when the episode... Who is talking, when in the episode you're listening. But... At least we're aware, and now you are aware.
Yeah.
Learning process. And speaking of, when you suggested this, so when you listeners write in, I and Lauren, we have this, like, big suggestion, very messy suggestions box. It's two boxes in an Excel sheet that's just gotten out of hand. So somebody suggested this a while back, and I had put it in to the spreadsheet. And I was like, Lauren, what topics are we going to do? And she responded, Groot. And I was like, immediately, what is Groot? And you said, you're the one that put it on the sheet. Oh, come to find out it's a beer. It's a type of ale.
or a type of herbal blend that can be used to make beers and ales. So I guess drink responsibly.
Yes, as always with these episodes. Mm-hmm. I do want to put in here that because you're missing the existential crisis I had in our previous introduction to this, because when I asked the question, what is Groot? It feels deep. It feels like an existential question. And it reminded me of a time a couple years back that I couldn't prove my existence to a bank.
Oh, right,
right. And she looked at me and she was laughing. And she was like, are you sure you exist? And I went like completely still and kind of looked in the distance like, do I exist? She's just trying to make small talk.
Yeah, you're not expecting a banking operator to right? to like put you into this kind of personal crisis.
Yes, but I still think about it. Every now and then, in the back of my brain, it niggles.
Yeah.
Do I exist?
Like, am I Groot?
Are we all
Groot?
Damn it, Marvel. Damn it, Marvel.
International Gruit Day is February 1st.
So we missed that one.
Solidly. solidly missed it. I don't think we could have missed it. We're like right at the point of not having been able to miss it more.
That's almost impressive. I think we should, you know, to give a pat on the back. We might have messed up the pronunciation, but we really, really messed up getting the International Gruit Day. And you can see our past beer episodes. We've done sour beers. We did one specifically on Asheville Brewing, that whole scene. IPAs, stouts, and porters. Guinness specifically. Martzen or Märzen, which also has a fun pronunciation that we never really nailed down.
Yep.
I think that's it, but it's possible there are more.
Yeah. We've talked about alcohol a number of times.
Yes, this is true. And related things, related topics.
Oh, absolutely.
But I suppose this brings us to our question. Gruit or Groot? What is it?
Well, Groot, spelled most often G-R-U-I-T, is a blend of herbs and or other plants used in beer brewing for flavor and microbe control instead of hops. And the word can also refer to the beers created with these herb blends, or some people would call those a Groot beer or Groot ale or what have you. These blends used have historically and modernly varied. They're often bitter or bitter-ish, but a Groot will lend more herbal or vegetal or earthy or medicinal flavors to the resulting beers than hops will. Hops being flowers that tend more toward the floral and citrus flavors on top of bitterness, less of the herbal vegetal stuff in there. Three ingredients I've seen talked about most often historically in Groot were yarrow, sweet gale or bog myrtle, and wild or marsh rosemary. Yertle flowers apparently taste sort of like chamomile. The leaves are sort of like lemon balm. Bog myrtle is apparently kind of resinous and sweet, and wild rosemary is apparently like bay leaf, kind of heady and herbal. But oh gosh, in doing this reading, I saw any number of plants, just plants that can be put in here. herbs, spices, whatever you want. Cinnamon, nutmeg, caraway seed, wormwood, lavender, nettle, lemon balm, sage, fennel seed, dandelion, carrot tops, clover, ginger, orange peels, lemon peels, honey, hyssop, spruce twigs, elderberries, bay leaves, anise, basil, juniper, rose hips. That's not a complete list.
This feels like you're making a potion, and I love it.
Brewing is totally like making a potion.
Yes. And I mean, just some of these ingredients sound so mystical to me just because I haven't encountered them.
Yeah.
So, I love this.
Yeah. I haven't encountered a lot of these outside of perfumes. So the concept is really interesting to me. And I really want to try like 19 different kinds of Groot now. Because the resulting drinks can vary widely in terms of flavor and color and alcohol content. It can be really, really specifically developed by the brewer.
Yes. Kind of a hard category to pin down.
Yeah.
And speaking of, what about the nutrition?
Drink responsibly. Mm-hmm. That's it.
That's all. It's hard to find numbers on this one, but I guess we got one.
Yeah. So although Groot is an ancient style of beer, it is making a modern comeback as brewers explore some of beer's roots. Pun intended in terms of putting roots in beer. Yeah. On beeradvocate.com, there are 325 examples of Groot-style beers from various breweries.
Listeners, if you know one we've got to try, let us know. Because I'm very, very keen on trying some.
Yeah.
Roots. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we do have some history for you.
Oh my gosh, we do. Yes. But first, we've got a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, beer is old, at least thousands and thousands of years old.
Like, 9,000 years or more. Like, we invented alcoholic beverages before we invented the wheel. So,
yes.
I mean, not us personally, but humans.
Of course.
Absolutely.
And to make beer, people generally used whatever they had on hand, the ingredients available to them wherever they were. Early humans recognized that in order to drink this alcoholic beverage they loved on the regular, they couldn't do the sweet root. Like, that was too much. They needed bitter flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to the discovery of hops, and particularly its use in beer in this case, all kinds of ingredients were used. Like, yes, yarrow and bog myrtle, which were, I had to look up what all of these things were, but herbs and shrubs, were popular in the early days. People used all kinds of things like dandelions, broom, which is an herb, rosemary, sage, wormwood, nettles, laurel berries, laserwort, poppy, ground ivy, wild carrot seeds, heather, and so much more. And essentially, they were making Groot beers, what we would think of now as Groots. Several specific styles coalesced based on ingredients available by region. Ancient Egyptians used things like meadow sweet, olive oil, dates, and wild herbs, for example. These Groot ales were most likely sweeter than what we might think of today and with a lower alcohol content. And people typically drank them soon after brewing.
These were a fresh ale type or beer type. However, there were likely, in addition to that sweetness, some sourish notes in there because until the 1800s, when Louis Pasteur studied yeast fermentation and developed pasteurization, beers were made with wild yeasts and bacteria that could add any number of tart or funky flavors. And see our sour beer episode for more on that.
And some of the archaeological evidence of ingredients used in these beers came from fossilized poop found at the bottom of a latrine.
That's great.
It is so great. So great. The first known mention of Groot in the written record occurred sometime during the 900s to 1000 CE in the description of a gift from Emperor Otto III to the St. Martinus Church. And it's sort of confusing, though, because it seems that in this context, they may have been referring to a specific ingredient they called Groot that was key in making Groot beers. And Lauren and I were discussing this before. There's an excellent paper that really deep dived into the history of Groots.
Called, in fact, The Rise and Fall of Groot.
Yes. And it was so well done. And it particularly examined a lot of this confusion, but there's so much discussion about taxes, which we're going to get into.
Oh, yeah.
My poor brain was like, wait a minute. I thought we were talking about beer. So, yes, the sale and distribution of this ingredient was called Grootrecht. And it basically, this gave those in power the right to dictate who could sell Groot and who could brew this beer. With the growth of organized towns and cities, brewers became specialized.
Yeah, this all developed from how beer was being brewed. Originally, it was mostly made by women on their family property. But yeah, eventually it became more common for brewers to operate out of a common community bakery slash brewery. And then brewers' guilds began forming. And this was all happening alongside monasteries, more formalized brewing programs around the same time. And basically, from what I understand, the nobility saw these, like, increasingly non-domestic brewing efforts and were like, y'all, we could be taxing this.
Mm-hmm.
Or possibly brewing became increasingly non-domestic because of the expense of paying for Grootrecht. So it's a chicken or egg. Is it taxes or brewers guilds? Which came first? I don't know. Because, right, like someone or a group of someones who had Grootrecht for a particular area basically had a monopoly on Groot sales and Groot beer making in that area.
Yes. Complicated. Rural areas restricted by the Grootrecht could get beer shipped from the nearest town.
And what areas were technically covered by any given decree was the source of apparently a lot of controversy. Like because some rural areas would be like, no, we're closer to this town. And some towns would be like, oh, no, you're closer to us. And so you don't get your own. You have to buy our beer. Like enough controversy that it was sometimes called Bierkrieg, like the beer wars.
Wow.
Stuff about taxes.
Right. Yep. Didn't think this is what we were going to be learning about, but here we are. And the original intent wasn't to mess with beer trade, but when city governments got involved, it turned into an excise tax, and one that went on to bring a lot of revenue for cities and towns. Eventually, members of royalty could instate Grootrecht in townships that had never had one, making it a royal right. And yes, apparently an interesting piece of medieval tax law, but I really could not wrap my head around it.
I think that's okay. I don't understand modern tax law.
That's true. That is true. Grootrecht could also be leased or sold. And as time went on, Grootrecht became an excise tax on wine and beer at large. In the 13th century, specific buildings that could brew and sell Groot were called Groothuizen, or Huizen? I'm not sure. This is also when Groot cooked in large copper kettles became fairly common. Apparently, a tax came out of that as well. Like kettle Groot tax.
Okay, sure.
Yes. Medieval medical records from this period indicate that a woman fell into a pot of boiling Groot and died soon after.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. And yes, word confusion. Throughout history, the word Groot has been used both for a beer and an unspecified, probably shifting ingredient or ingredients, perhaps like a spice blend. The ingredient or ingredients called Groot that was the impetus for Grootrecht is unclear, but they must have thought it was necessary for beer brewing at the time. Or one theory is that it actually referred to duckweed, something brewers had to have removed to brew. So it was like a tax to get that removed. In the 14th century, the word Groot often referred to concentrated malt. Yeah. So lots of word confusion on this one. Interesting tidbit, also in the 14th century, the Dutch briefly believed that hopped beer made men fat and that ales were unmanly, only for ladies. This belief didn't last long, though.
Oh, goodness. I would like to argue with you slightly, because this was, and like low-key is, still a belief. There are all kinds of folk medicine bits of lore about hops, because hops were used in traditional medicines as a sedative, and apparently at one point thought to be a rare anti-aphrodisiac. And specifically, fat development in men has been said to be in the chest, called brewer's droop. And modernly, we do know that hops contain phytoestrogens, which are these compounds that are similar to the human hormone estrogen, but which we don't really have, like, definitive research into the workings of in the human body, other than to say that, like, as long as you're consuming a moderate amount, you're going to be fine. See our tofu episode for more on that. Mm-hmm. Also, I want to put in here that, like, drinking enough of any kind of beer could result in fat development, and that the human chest is one of the areas where fat develops. So I feel like blaming it on the hops specifically is rather missing the point of the glass of carbs that you're consuming.
It's the hops.
Maybe the specifics that you were talking about was restricted to this, like, relatively, but myths about it still,
yes,
are still out there.
For sure. Again, this was, you never know where the research will take you. This was interspersed in the tax paper about Groot beer. And I'm like, wait, what are we talking about now? Okay. Okay. And now you listeners get to go on the ride with us as well.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
At one time, Groot was the go-to ale in medieval Europe. Recipes were often held by church or civil officials, and some places even had Groot masters.
And in locales with specific Groot blends, the Grootrecht restricted what ingredients could go into Groot beers sold there, which sometimes meant the specific exclusion of this up-and-comer, hops.
Right. This changed in 1516 with a German beer purity law called Reinheitsgebot, and that was enacted that year, declaring the only ingredients allowed in beer were barley, hops, and water. Yeast had yet to be fully understood when it came to brewing, though it would get added into this definition a few centuries later, and this prohibited many ingredients that were key in Groot.
In most places, there is at least one case study of Cologne where the existing Groot laws were so strong that it delayed the introduction of hops into the local beers for like 100 years.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Taxes! Love
Taxes.
It!
Taxes! And yeah, separate episode, but briefly, humanity's knowledge of hops when it comes to beer brewing goes back about 1,000 years, while beer brewing itself, yes, much older. Uh-huh. And yet these days, in more places than Germany, a beer must contain hops to qualify as a beer if there's like a definition, as we just discussed in place. Germany began exporting hops for brewing in the 13th century. The fact that they elongated the shelf life of beer was one of the reasons brewers were eager to use hops. Groot brewers and lovers lamented on the damage that hops did to Groot. Here's a quote from the time. "Hopped beer, which one usually drinks in our country, has diminished and damaged our Groot so much."
Oh.
Oh. One of the reasons behind this law? Puritans!
Wait, what?
Yes. Some of the ingredients in Groot were believed to be aphrodisiacs. Yep. And also highly intoxicating. A few of the herbs that were used may have been chosen specifically for that reason, which were big no-goes in the books of Puritans.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, also taxes. This pretty much killed the commercial Groot industry. By the 18th century, beer made with hops was the norm, and pretty much everything else went by the wayside. More religious stuff. The Catholic Church held a monopoly over the brewing of Groot in Europe until the 16th century. Along with pockets of officials and things, but they were pretty highly involved, where hops, the church widely regarded hops as an invasive species. Not only that, in the words of Wall Street Journal beer critic and author of A Brewer's Tale, The History of the World According to Beer, William Boswick, quote, "One reason was that the 12th century German mystic and abbess Hildegard had pronounced that hops were not very good for you because they make the soul of a man sad and weigh down his inner organs. So if you were a Protestant brewer and wanted to thumb your nose at Catholicism, you use hops instead of herbs."
Huh.
Yeah. And Martin Luther was a big part of this. He was a big fan of beer and wine. He believed it helped with his constipation and difficulty sleeping.
Okay.
Yes. In some cities, Groot beer production was reinstated after being halted in the 15 and 1600s after pregnant women and monks protested, claiming it was a medicinally useful product. In fact, one of the first known printed recipes for Groot beer was printed in a medical text in 1511. It was widely believed that there were many health benefits associated with drinking Groot.
Huh.
Yeah. Huh, indeed. Skipping way ahead. In the 1990s, with craft beer revival in places like the U.S. and U.K., microbreweries started reviving Groot ales. From a Guardian article written by Mark Dredge in 2010, molecular archaeology has made it possible to reconstruct ancient brews, and ingredients like yarrow and bog myrtle are making a comeback. Beer may never be the same again. Ellipses. Yeah, so like I said, I really want to get my hands on some. I'm excited that people are experimenting with it.
Yeah. Again. Oh, always. I mean, I'm a big fan of sour beers, and I am so pleased that the explosion of those has occurred. And yes. So I want this to explode as well, so that I just want to drink stuff that tastes weird and challenges my palate and does not go with any of the food I'm eating. That's all I want to do.
That's all she wants, world. Why can't it happen? I think I'm hoping we'll get there. If we can get some, we should definitely our next D&D session. That feels like a good D&D drink.
Ooh, yeah. That seems very thematic, right?
It does.
For our vaguely Star Wars related D&D campaign.
Very vague, not obvious at all.
No. Certainly not. y'all understand the subtlety with which Annie works, then yes. I'm sure you can imagine.
Subtle is my middle name. As I come in a Star Wars shirt specific to the session that we're doing.
She named a character Shenanigans, y'all. That's a thing that happened.
Shenanigans. And also Snoby One, who lives
so,
in this...
So how could I forget?
How could you forget Snoby One, who lives in a snowy mountain?
Oh.
I can only hope that is a happy facepalm.
It's for sure a groaner. However, I mean, I was the one who went out of my way to make my character ask the name of those characters so that I could hear whatever puns.
You succeeded.
Come up.
You succeeded because Shenanigan was not necessarily going to come up, but he did. Anyway. That is what we have to say about Groot for now.
It is. And we do have some listener mail for you.
We do. But first, we have one more quick break for word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Snowberry.
That one went quickly.
I was like, how does I am Groot?
Oh, I see you. Okay.
And I was doing the...
Yeah, you know,
the wavy okay. I don't know how you couldn't pick up on what I was thinking, Lauren. It's that subtlety. That's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Joe wrote, I'm Filipino, and I just had to share the adobo episode with my family.
Aww.
Their version uses chicken drumsticks and thighs, soy sauce and vinegar, and is usually on the stewy side. Sometimes we'll even put potatoes in it. But that isn't the adobo I wanted to tell you about. This version is called adobo asin, salted adobo. Here's the adobo asin recipe. Please note that my dad is very much part of the I don't measure school of cooking, so much of this is done to taste. Buy a good fatty hunk of pork butt and cut it into 2-inch chunks. Place them in a pot and just barely cover the pieces with water. Salt the water. Dad says it should probably be as salty as the sea and bring it to a boil. Once it's boiling, taste the broth to see if the salt level is to your liking. The more salt, the better it will preserve. While the pork is boiling, prepare your garlic. Remove the skins from however many garlic cloves you like. Dad usually goes with a head of garlic at minimum. Check to see if the pork is finished. He pinches it between his fingers to see if it's soft but not falling apart. Once it reaches that state, remove most of the remaining water and let the fat render out and begin to fry the pork, only adding more oil if necessary. Add the garlic when the pork turns light gold and continue stirring and frying until the garlic cloves are crispy and the pork is dark brown and crispy as well. Serve with lots of rice and pickled vegetables on the side. My dad claims adobo asin is most likely local to my family's home province of Bicol, since he's never seen it prepared by non-Bicolanos. According to my great-grandmother, this method of cooking was critical during World War II. When a hog was butchered, they could cook the choice fatty parts of the pig this way, and it would preserve for months, even at room temperature, thanks to the fat and the salt. If they had to move around, it traveled well in the clay pot it was cooked in. Again, no refrigeration required, and all you'd have to do is cook some rice and reheat only what was needed. For those screaming about the amounts of fat and salt in this recipe, first of all, it's all in the name of preservation. And second, it's offset by all the garlic. Garlic's good for the heart, right? Yeah. Also
Absolutely.
Keeps the vampires away. So.
Right? Both important things.
Yes. Again, I've been loving all these recipes. I've been trying them. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time to send these to us.
Yes.
We really appreciate getting them.
So much. Oh, mm-hmm. Heck. A fellow Lauren wrote, I have been listening for quite a while now, but this is my first time writing in. Recently, my mom and I went to all the local Mexican supermarkets in our town in Wisconsin. I had recently listened to the boba tea episode, and while we were browsing the stores, I saw these cans of bubble tea. I audibly gasped and said, Mom, I need to send this to Annie and Lauren. We're name twins, by the way. She then said, who? I've told her countless amounts of very important facts that I've learned from the show, and yet she never can remember the name of the show or the hosts. Alas, the trials of motherhood. Anyway, I don't have much experience with boba tea as I have an odd fear of choking on the boba balls. However, the concept of boba tea in a can seemed like something you guys would be interested or horrified to see. Something about it seems wrong, but maybe it's just me.
Interesting. I will say when I was in China, there was a lot of canned teas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And there was one I loved, and I've been trying to find it here. I know it must exist. It must be available for me to get, but I don't know the name of it. I just know it was in this, like, red ridged can with yellow writing, and I think I've seen it around. Now, bubble tea, yes, is slightly different.
Right, yeah, because I feel like the tapioca would just, like, kind of, like, continue increasing in size until it's just a can of tapioca.
You open it up and it's like the snakes in a jar drink. Terrifying.
But no, that is fascinating. I'd try it, sure.
Yeah, I'd be willing to try it. I have some concerns, but open to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thanks to both of those listeners so much for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.